This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. Should we be worried about our kids and grandkids catching COVID?
The short answer is that we do not know. This virus is completely new, and we are still getting to know it and know what it does.
The long answer is coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. Last week, Twitter temporarily blocked the Trump campaign from using its platform over a tweet that linked to a video in which the president made false claims about COVID-19. The video featured the president in an interview on Fox News in which President Trump claimed that children are, quote, almost immune from this disease, close quote. This controversy occurs in the midst of an increasingly politicized debate over whether to reopen schools this fall and whether it's safe for children to attend in person. Doctors and pediatric experts have concluded that children are at risk of developing serious health conditions if they're exposed to COVID-19, even though older people face a greater risk. Roxy Todd spoke with two West Virginia doctors who specialize in infectious diseases in children to get their take on the risks and what advice they have for parents.
According to the Centers for Disease Control, while some children and infants have been sick with COVID-19, adults make up most of the known cases to date. But there are risks for children, according to pediatric experts like Mariana Lanata Piazon, who works at Marshall Health.
The short answer is that we do not know. This virus is completely new, and we are still getting to know it and know what it does.
And this uncertainty is at the heart of the debate among medical experts. At this time, Piazon says there's limited research into the possible health impacts for children who do get the virus. There are some children who develop serious conditions, and some have even died. Many of the children who develop serious conditions were otherwise healthy, so it's not quite clear how to predict which children may be most at risk.
If your child is one of the ones that develops a more severe presentation, which may end up having them be admitted to the intensive care unit, having kidney failure or needing more support, then they may have more chronic consequences depending on how much their organs are affected.
Despite these risks, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that children return to school in person if administrators can enforce social distancing. This is because there are advantages to in-person learning emotionally and mentally.
Children do better when there are stressors, when they are in their normal routine.
Dr. Catherine Moffitt is a pediatric infectious disease specialist at West Virginia University School of Medicine. She and other pediatricians advise that each family needs to be able to decide for themselves if they should return to in-person learning. She says she's heard from parents who are worried, particularly because doctors can't say for certain which children are at risk or what could be the potential long-term impacts for kids who contract COVID-19.
I think there is the fear of the unknown of the multi-inflammatory syndrome in children. It's a toxic shock-like syndrome in children. There have only been a few hundred cases reported with several dozen deaths. But when you look at a healthy child who then gets this inflammatory syndrome and potentially dies, then it's significant. It doesn't matter how rare it is. I think parents can imagine that it could be their own child who gets that.
And the reality is, lots of parents simply do not have the ability to work from home, according to Piazon.
And they will have to, no matter what, send their kids to school or daycare, even if they're uncomfortable with that decision.
So far, there have been 11 outbreaks in daycares and at-home childcare businesses in West Virginia. According to the Department of Health and Human Resources, 25 staff and 15 children have contracted COVID-19 through a daycare. Six child care centers are currently closed because they have a current or active case of COVID-19 reported at their facility. Both Piazon and Moffitt agree that preventing outbreaks at daycares and schools is going to require that administrators, families, and teachers communicate quickly if a case is reported at a school.
If there is somebody that's positive in the school, that school needs to be transparent and be able to tell families, track contact tracing, and get the health department involved to help.
Being reassured that the schools safely have a plan in place will put a lot of parents' minds at ease.
Moffitt's advice to families, if they choose in-person learning, is that adults should help model mask wearing and encourage children to do the same.
Especially young children. Have them practice at home. Younger children can have masks for their dolls or their Beanie Babies. Get them in different colors. Get them that they fit the child, not an adult-sized mask, but a pediatric mask. And help them to understand why they're wearing them to protect others. You make it a story. You make it, help them to learn. I think the children would surprise us.
In a virtual news briefing last week, Justice said he and State Superintendent Clayton Birch plan to reopen classrooms September 8th. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Roxy Todd.
Appalachia Health News is a project at West Virginia Public Broadcasting made possible by Marshall Health and the Charleston Area Medical Center. Also, the Inside Appalachia team is working on a series about child care. If you're a parent with small children and you've experienced economic hardship because of child care issues during the pandemic, we're interested in hearing your story. Or if you're a child care worker and you're worried about your health or your job, consider sending a message to insideappalachia@wvpublic.org. Nearly 5 months into West Virginia's response to the coronavirus pandemic, Governor Jim Justice said Monday his administration needs to develop another round of plans to test vulnerable populations and children. The governor also said the state is ready and willing to disperse additional unemployment benefits after President Trump signed an executive action extending those benefits. Dave Mistich reports.
With outbreaks reported in nursing homes and correctional centers across the state, Justice says he is focused on developing plans to retest all residents, inmates, and staff. However, he says the state does not currently have the capability to test all students and teachers ahead of the targeted start date of school on September 8th. Justice also says he will comply with executive actions from President Trump that call for an additional $400 weekly unemployment benefit. According to Trump's memo, states would be expected to pick up a quarter of that cost. Justice says that will cost the state $26 million a week. Just before the turn of the fiscal year in late June, Justice allocated $678 million in CARES Act funding to take care of potential unemployment benefits. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich.
Turning now to energy and the environment, a major Ohio Valley coal producer says it will speed up its exit from producing coal used to generate electricity. As Brittany Patterson reports, Contura Energy says the move is tied to the ongoing global transition away from fossil fuels.
In a call with shareholders last week, Contura announced it was moving up its timeline to focus its operations solely on producing metallurgical or steel coal. The Tennessee-based company operates both thermal and metallurgical mines in West Virginia, Virginia, and Pennsylvania. Contura, in 2018, purchased Alpha Natural Resources, which, in 2011, took over mines owned by Massey Energy. Earlier this year, Contura announced that it will cease operation at its Cumberland mine in Pennsylvania by the end of 2022 if it doesn't find a buyer. The company says the COVID-19 pandemic continues to hurt coal prices. Contura reported a $238 million net loss in its second quarter. Executives said the company will idle a mine and the Delbarton prep plant in West Virginia in the next 6 weeks. In 2018, federal data show Contura was the 10th largest coal producer nationwide. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Brittany Patterson.
Much of southwest Virginia and southern West Virginia are rich with natural springs. People have long visited here for mineral baths. And there's also a long history of people who live here getting drinking water from these natural springs. But as Robbie Harris reports, a new study finds 80% of springs surveyed are contaminated with potentially dangerous bacteria.
In the mountains of southwestern Virginia, with its vertical landscapes and low population density, it's not always easy or even possible to get water to some homes. It could cost $50,000 or more to hook up to a sewer system, that is, if there is one nearby.
People have been drinking from these springs for a long time.
That's Virginia Tech bioengineering professor Leanne Kramidis. She says in many cases, even people with running water at home prefer getting it from these springs. Kramidis is considered one of the foremost experts on water quality and availability in Appalachia.
You know, if you have a well and you have very high iron in your water, manganese, it may be discolored. Maybe if you've switched from well to a public system, you taste the chlorine and it tastes funny. So in all these cases, people say, you know, the water coming out of my tap at home isn't palatable. This seems natural and it's pretty and it's coming out of a pretty place in the mountain.
But all that beauty doesn't mean there's no harmful bacteria in the water. You can't see E. coli and you can't taste it.
E. coli is naturally in the gut of every warm-blooded mammal and bird. So if you find E. coli, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the kind of E. coli that's going to make you sick, but it's something that should be in the intestine, which means it came out of the intestine, which means that there's poop in the water. So I always joke with my students that, you know, even little kids know you don't drink poop.
Her survey found the springs to be contaminated some of the time. 80% tested positive at least once, but there's no regular testing program in place, though some local health departments label the springs not for human consumption. But for people who've grown up with and come to rely on these springs, it's a cultural thing.
People have been telling me they value these springs. That means that they should be there for them to use. We just have to figure out a way to lower the risk.
Kramidis says if a municipal drinking water facility had anywhere near that 80% level of E. coli contaminations, they'd shut the plant down and send out a boil water advisory. Kramidis also teaches water and sanitation in developing countries.
And we're always talking about being culturally sensitive and malleable to what a community wants. So not just delivering them what we think they should have, but what they'd actually want. And that's sometimes that then we forget is it actually a guiding principle we should use in the United States as well.
She'd like to see these springs protected with a point-of-use water treatment right there on the site to keep them free of dangerous bacteria.
Because if they're valued by the community, I'd like them to still be available for use, but safe.
At this point, we can't know if they're safe. Virginia's natural springs are considered environmental waters and not intended to be drinking water. So they're outside the regulation for water quality. But in many countries around the world, communal springs are common, and there's even a version of that in this country.
I do know of some areas in Kentucky that have developed kind of water kiosks that become a place of gathering, a place where you can hold farmers markets and kind of catch up with people. And so maybe that is something we'd like here. Maybe we need to dream beyond what we originally thought was only possible overseas.
Appalachian springs have long been a vital resource in this region that people think of as healthy and safe.
So finding the investment and kind of the will to develop them, that's the challenge.
In Blacksburg, I'm Robbie Harris.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Andrea Billups is our news director. I'm your host and producer, Glynis Board. This is West Virginia Morning.